for me as a vet, I think that pet insurance has a big opportunity to change the way veterinarians experience their day in terms of the decision making when it comes to choosing a treatment plan.
Hey there, Vetfolio Voice family. Welcome back. This episode is sponsored by ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Programs and features Dr. Jennifer Sperry here to discuss a topic that, for me, can feel a little overwhelming at times, and that's pet insurance. Now, to be honest, when I start to think about all of the options out there, it can quickly start to feel overwhelming. And so when clients have questions, sometimes it seems tricky to know how to guide them because there's just a lot of nuance when determining what's going to work best in each unique situation. So Dr. Sperry was really helpful in walking through some of those nuances and helping make sense of some of the more intricate differences among pet insurance policies. For example, the differences between accident, illness, and wellness coverage, how deductibles can vary, and how insurance companies tend to handle pre-existing conditions. Probably most importantly, we talked about how having a general understanding of the differences in insurance policies out there can just help us have a more informed, more supportive conversation with pet owners when they inevitably have questions about pet insurance. So if you're like me and you don't always feel confident in your ability to offer guidance to pet owners when they have these questions, this one's definitely worth a listen. Let me tell you about Dr. Sperry and we will get into it. Dr. Jennifer Sperry is a companion animal veterinarian and the veterinary advisor for ASPCA Pet Insurance Programs. With over a decade of experience in general and emergency medicine, she deeply understands not only the challenges pets and their families face navigating veterinary costs, but also the emotional toll it can take on veterinary teams when finances limit care. Since joining ASPCA Pet Insurance in 2020, Dr. Sperry has helped bridge the gap between veterinary professionals and pet insurance by providing medical insights, improving policies, and supporting educational initiatives. Outside of work, she enjoys life with her husband, two young boys, and a playful whippet, and often can be found relaxing by whatever campfire is closest. All right, let's go ahead and get into our episode.
Microbiome science is a swiftly evolving field that has caught the attention of pet owners. Are you prepared to answer their questions? NAVC's brand new veterinary microbiome certification course will give you the skills to implement microbiome science in your daily practice and improve patient care. New research shows maintaining a balanced gut microbiome is vital for optimal nutrition, disease prevention, and longevity in pets. Register today on vetfolio.com.
Well, I'm excited to be joined by Dr. Jennifer Sperry for this episode. Dr. Sperry, thank you for joining me. I feel like this is a really important topic.
Yeah, I think it's a really important topic, and it's exciting to have the chance to talk to you about it today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, kind of starting off, you know, when we're talking about pet insurance, this conversation has changed quite a lot over the last several years. And some of that, I think, has to do with our perception of our pets and kind of the culture around pet ownership. So can you talk about that a little bit, just the culture of pet ownership and how that kind of influences our thinking around pet insurance?
I'll give you my theory. And this is really based on what I observed in clinical practice. I feel like I started my life in clinical practice around a time when things were changing quite a bit when it comes to people's relationships with their pets. I think in past generations, we had animals in our lives and even pets in our lives because they were a tool. They served some purpose in the household other than companionship. You know, we'd have them to keep pests away or as guard animals or farm help, herding, things like that. And the value of those pets in our lives, even though they provided companionship, the value of those pets in our lives was really tied to what they could do for us in our household and in our work. But in the past, you know, 2 to 3 generations, that has changed a lot. Most of the pets in our homes don't have a particular job, but we consider them to be elevated in our social circles. So we look at them more like members of our families rather than tools in our work and in our households. And we see ourselves even as more like parents or guardians or partners to these pets than we see them as owners for these pets. So this has changed quite a bit just in the past couple of generations in our culture. And at the same time, veterinary medicine has changed a lot. There's been a lot of advances in medicine in general, but veterinary medicine has become a lot safer and a lot more sophisticated in the last couple of generations. And we have these pet owners who have this really, really close bond with the animals in their lives who are turning to us and saying, we want the same level of sophistication in medical care for our pets as we do for our other family members. And this kind of culmination of these two changes in our lives, I think, has really increased the cost of veterinary care, but also our desire to be able to provide a certain level of veterinary care that's costly. And so when we talk about insurance, we talk about, you know, what kind of solutions do we have to allow families to achieve the level of medical care financially that they really want to be able to offer their pets?
Wow, there's so much gold in that answer right there. I was listening to you going, oh my gosh, this could just be a whole podcast discussion in and of itself.
I know, I went on a long time, but I could talk forever just because, you know, that's my life too. I have pets in my home and I want to be able to give them anything that my doctor would be able to give me. So I can understand how other people in our society feel the same.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And no, not that you went on for a long time. I think there, like I said, there was so much good perspective there, so much good information. You know, and of course, thinking along the lines of pet insurance, you made some really great points there that, you know, our relationship with our pets has changed. The cost of veterinary care has changed. And along with that, significantly more opportunities to provide this really high level of care. And sometimes those different factors can be in conflict with each other. And this is where pet insurance can help in some situations. So when we're talking about pet insurance, you know, I always struggle with that conversation with pet owners a little bit because there are a lot of different options out there. So can you kind of help me, hopefully I'm not the only one that has this question, help me wrap my head around the different types of policies and where they might be best applied?
Yeah. So again, in practice, I was a big proponent of pet insurance, but even at that point in my career, I didn't really understand how it worked. And a lot of my clients, even my clients with pet insurance, didn't really understand how it worked because I could tell when they would come in and they'd have a problem with their pet and they would ask me, will my insurance cover this? To me, that said, I don't quite understand what I have purchased. So what I've noticed, you know, now that I'm on the industry side and I'm exposed to all different types of policies, that there's three really big categories of coverage that are available. There's accident-only insurance coverage, there's accident and illness insurance coverage, and then there's wellness. And I think those are the big areas where my clients weren't sure how their insurance policy was going to work for them. So what I think it's important to know from a veterinarian's perspective is that people don't always know the difference between an accident and an illness. So, you know, an accident is something external that happens to a pet that makes that pet sick or injured. So that could be something like getting hit by a car or falling from a height or ingesting a poison. So some external influence has made the pet sick. Whereas an illness is something where something internally has gone wrong to make a pet sick. So they develop diabetes or arthritis or some kind of illness that's making them not behave the way they normally would. So my clients, what I noticed is that they didn't really understand the difference between an accident and an emergency. So clients think of an emergency as, you know, being something that just happens and needs to be addressed right away. And their minds automatically go to things like getting hit by a car or breaking a leg or something like that. But they also will lump in something that happens really suddenly that's more of an illness, like seizures or a, you know, like a DKA or a really acute illness that comes up that's very severe. So sometimes we'll have people that have an accident coverage policy and they don't really understand that something that was an emergency may not necessarily qualify as an accident when it comes to their insurance. So that's one thing that people would often mention to me. And then the other thing that would come up is that people would want to know if their flea tick prevention or their heartworm test or their vaccines were going to be covered. And again, different policies may or may not cover these types of wellness care. And people, I noticed, don't always read too far into what their policy covers. So understanding that there are three main categories to coverage, I think is a great way for veterinarians to prepare themselves to discuss insurance with their clients, and also for clients to prepare themselves to make decisions when it comes to getting the kind of policy that's going to cover what they expect and what they really value.
Sure. I think you broke that down really well. And to be honest, I don't know that I completely understood the differentiation between accident and illness and that these were separate considerations that may be covered in different ways depending on the policy. So thinking from that perspective, I can certainly empathize with pet owners in that there's these different considerations when deciding what policy works best for you. So with that in mind, how do we approach that with pet owners? I don't feel like I'm spending a lot of time talking to pet owners about the different aspects of pet insurance. You know, kind of when we're talking about it, it's more of this high level overview. But I completely take your point that this is something really important that pet owners need to understand. So how do we make sure that they are fully wrapping their heads around the difference between an accident and an illness when they're deciding what policy is going to be best for them?
I think the best way, because it's not really the vet's job to give their clients a course on insurance and what all is out there, but the place where the vet really shines and where a vet can really give important information is around kind of the mindset that they're at when they come in and we have that insurance discussion. So as a vet, I most often was discussing insurance with my clients when they came in with a new pet. And usually the new pet would be a puppy or a kitten or a really young, really healthy animal. And I seem to know now that the mindset of pet owners in that life stage is that they can't really imagine their pet having a chronic illness or an age-related illness or something like that. When they think about things that might go wrong, where they're going to need to see the vet, when they have a new puppy or kitten, they're thinking about things like the pet swallowing something they shouldn't have, or getting stepped on, having some sort of trauma, like broken bone, those types of things, because those are the risks that are there in that life stage. And I think this is the opportunity for veterinarians to jump in and say, yes, there are definitely those accidents that happen when we have a new young pet, but also we want that pet to be with us and comfortable for as long as possible. And there's going to be a time down the road where your pet is more at risk for those chronic illnesses like arthritis or diabetes or those things that maybe aren't so dramatic and sudden, but are things that can come up and be a cost over time and have a huge impact on the pet's wellness over time. So I think that's a great moment for vets to kind of fast forward for the pet owner, to remind them that there are things ahead that they need to plan for in order to keep that pet as healthy as long as possible, and also in order to keep, you know, your finances healthy in that same context.
Gosh, I can relate to that so much. I have a very young boxer who came to me as a result of an accident and was surrendered. And yes, and that is exactly where my mind went when, you know, I initially brought her home. And it wasn't until, I don't know how much later, you know, weeks probably, that I went, oh my gosh, I need to think about echocardiograms. And there's all these other things than this horrible accident that this poor dog was in. So yeah, you know, if I'm saying I don't always make these distinctions between accident and illness, and, you know, even myself with an otherwise young and healthy dog wasn't really thinking about the chronic side of things, then absolutely I can see a really good opportunity for veterinarians to say, hey, You're at where your mind is right now makes sense, and you're absolutely right. But remember, there's other things that can happen too. And so when you're looking at these options, make sure you're keeping that in mind.
Yeah, and I think it fits in really well with the other kind of prep that we do for our brand new pet owners when we talk about, I'm going to see you a lot in this puppy kitten phase, and then I'm not going to see you very much for a while. But then someday we're going to be talking about screening blood work and all of these things that we do to keep our pets healthy. So it's not really just exclusively an insurance conversation. I just think it's this is what we expect from our relationship as a pet owner and as a veterinarian together through this journey that we're going to have with this pet that you're just introducing us to.
Sure. So that makes a lot of sense in terms of accident versus illness. I am curious about wellness coverage with pet insurance. Can you expand on that a little bit?
I would say most pet insurance policies are not designed to cover predictable wellness care. So your annual visit to your veterinarian for a checkup or vaccines or your flea tick prevention is not something that an accident or illness insurance policy is really intended to cover. But there are additional products that you can add on that help you manage the cost of those expenses. So there often are wellness plans that you can add to your insurance policy that will give you some reimbursement for your vaccines and those annual expenses that you can predict with your pet.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. There's another aspect of insurance policies that I want to chat about that I do feel like I have a good handle on this piece of it. But now, given everything we've talked about to this point, now I'm kind of questioning myself and I'm very, very curious about your answer. And that's deductibles. I think the idea of a per condition or an annual deductible, feel like that makes sense in my mind. But I do know that I've seen that be a point of confusion for pet owners.
Yeah, so I've had people ask me what's better, a per condition deductible or a per year deductible. So, for anybody that hasn't looked too deeply into insurance, just like in your car insurance, a deductible is that first chunk of your veterinary expenses that you have to pay out of pocket before your insurance kicks in and starts reimbursing. And there's two main models that I've seen in pet insurance for how the deductible is applied. One is per condition and one is per year. So the per condition one is, if your pet gets ear infections, you're going to pay, for example, the first $200 towards care for ear infections before your pet insurance kicks in. And then if your pet with ear infections goes and gets urinary tract infections, you're going to pay the first $200 to care for those before your insurance kicks in, and so on. Whereas where you have a per year deductible, you pay that first $200 of any veterinary care for any condition in that year, and then your insurance kicks in no matter what kind of issue your pet encounters. So when people ask me what's better, it's impossible for me to predict, especially if you're coming with a brand new pet, because your pet might be the type that gets allergies and sees the vet very frequently for allergies, but doesn't have much else going on in the medical experience, and they're going to do great with a per condition deductible. But you may end up with a pet that has allergies, has a urinary tract infection, breaks a leg, eats something poisonous. And if that all happens in 1 year, you're paying that deductible multiple times in the year compared to a per year deductible where you just pay it the one time. So for me, as a customer of insurance, I really value predictability. So I know that if my pet gets sick this year, I have a certain deductible, and then everything after that that's eligible is going to have some reimbursement or some coverage. I like that predictability of the per year. But again, if you have the one pet that has one issue and only that one issue over and over again, some people might win that gamble. So it really depends on what, I guess, your cash flow is, what your pet ends up being like in their health experience, and how much you like predictability or unpredictability before you can say one a model is better than the other.
Yeah, it sounds like there's an element of psychology there too, to say, what are you
Absolutely.
comfortable with?
Yes.
So that's kind of talking about deductibles. I'm happy to report I do feel like I had a reasonable understanding of deductibles. So that makes me happy listening to your explanation. And I kind of think of those as like the start of insurance coverage. What about the end of insurance coverage? What do we need to be aware of in terms of coverage limits? Like, how, and I don't think that's something where we're necessarily like getting in depth with clients and talking to clients about a whole lot, but it does seem like it would be something important to understand.
I think it's important because coverage limits, I would say the most common model for coverage limits that I see in pet insurance is an annual limit. And so that's the maximum amount that an insurance policy will reimburse over the course of a year. There are sometimes per condition limits. So there are some pet insurance policies that will cover, up to X amount of dollars for diabetes. And then after that, it will not cover anymore. So that's another kind of approach to annual limits or limits in general, limits of coverage. And then what your limits are set at have a big impact on what your policy costs. So you may have a policy that pays, for example, $5,000 per year. You may have a policy that pays $20,000 per year. And of course, that higher limit policy will cost more. So these are things to kind of keep in mind when you're comparing insurance and deciding what you want. I would say that in clinics, again, another area where I realized that my customers or my clients didn't quite understand how insurance worked was that they would come in and they would say, I claimed too much, so my insurance company stopped covering me. And from their perception, it seemed like this arbitrary decision that occurred that happened, as a matter of mystery on behalf of the insurance company. And what I realize now is that they were probably reaching their annual limits, but people have a lot of more experience with their auto insurance or their home insurance, where some policies are able to do that. If you're getting in a lot of accidents, your insurance company may say, we're going to reduce your coverage or we're going to stop covering you. And that's something that it's part of what they call claims risk management. And that's really common in other types of insurance, but it's actually not very common at all in pet insurance. So just kind of looking back on that experience, I'm thinking what was happening was that people were reaching their annual limits or their per condition limits. And these are things that fortunately you can predict by reading the terms and conditions of the policy. So that big document you get when you sign up for your insurance policy will tell you what your annual limits are, or they'll tell you if they're per condition limits. And if they happen to do that claims risk management, that will be written into your policy. So it's something you should be able to predict, even though it's not very common.
Yes, living in Florida, yes, we're very familiar with claims risk management.
Unfortunately.
I know we're not alone in that, but yes, something we definitely have experienced. But that's good to know that it's really not common in pet insurance, and that's not generally something that we or our clients would be encountering. So this next question I have is something, this one I know I'm confused about, and so I'm very much looking forward to the clarification. But it has to do with pre-existing conditions. I don't feel like I've ever fully wrapped my head around how to talk to clients and how to think about pre-existing conditions when it comes to pet insurance.
Yeah, this is something that I get involved in the discussion very commonly, both inside the company and then externally with veterinarians and our customers. So a pre-existing condition is something that started before the policy started. So most pet insurance policies do not cover pre-existing conditions. So the big thing to know is that a pre-existing condition doesn't start when a formal diagnosis is made or even when a first examination addresses the issue. A pre-existing condition starts when the pet owner first notices something is wrong with their pet. So they first start to see some clinical signs of illness. So that's an important thing to know because, for example, they look at their pet and they notice they're limping. If they get insurance in preparation for going to their vet to address this problem, they may be thinking that that issue would be covered, and that's a situation that where they would be disappointed because the pet was already showing those signs. So it's important to know that the condition starts when the clinical signs first appear. And that's a good way to make sure that the expectations are set appropriately for pet owners. Another thing to know is this is why we veterinarians tend to want to talk about insurance when the pet is young and healthy or brand new, because they're less likely to have some issue going on when they're really young. But what I think is really important to remember is that just because a pet has a pre-existing condition that won't be covered does not mean that they're not going to develop something new and different that the policy would cover. So if you think about a pet that's diagnosed with allergies or allergic skin disease, if that happens before the policy starts, we know that that client is going to be in with their pet many, many times. It's going to be an ongoing expense that the pet insurance is not going to cover. And sometimes we as veterinarians will, or even we as insurance customers will say, well, then it's no point in getting insurance now. It's too late. But the way I look at it is I'm already stretched to my limits paying out of pocket for this pet's, you know, frequent ear infections or skin issues, rashes, hotspots, etc. If something new shows up now, what am I going to do? So I like to kind of flip that conversation and say, now might be a good time to really think about insurance, because now I've been introduced to the true cost of medical care. I'm stretched to my limits and I need some kind of backup plan if I need to be at the veterinarian more often with something new.
Definitely something to consider. Yeah, of, you know, having those allergies doesn't mean we're not going to have a toxicity or a broken leg or diabetes or something like
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, when we're talking about pre-existing conditions, because I can absolutely understand what you're saying about it. It starts when the pet owner first notices the condition. So, you know, if we have notes for the past 2 years of the pet owner saying, oh, you know, they're a little itchy, but they're okay. And then all of a sudden they come in with a pet insurance policy and say, oh, actually, this is a problem. That absolutely makes sense to me how that would not be covered.
Right.
I'm thinking of like those young, healthy puppies, though, that maybe they come from not the most ideal situation and there's intestinal parasites and fleas. And so we are treating diarrhea and we do have an itchy dog. How do we think about those in terms of if this pet were to have, say, skin allergies or a GI condition down the road?
So we definitely divide things into, and it's not always black and white, but we try to divide things into chronic illnesses or potentially chronic illnesses and acute and transient illnesses. So if your pet, you know, you just brought them home, you changed their food and they had diarrhea, they came in for treatment and the symptoms resolved and the pet was fine. If there's a good chunk of time that elapses and the pet is completely normal, usually you may find that a claim is declined, but you usually can come back and say, oh, here's my medical records. It helps to demonstrate that the issue was treated, it resolved, it was transient. So now, you know, a year later when my pet, you know, ate something weird or whatever and has diarrhea, I should be able to get coverage. Sometimes there has to be a conversation that happens to exchange the right information so that the insurance company knows what's going on. But for things that are likely to be transient, you should not be seeing an exclusion for diarrhea for the rest of your policy's life. But it sometimes does take a little bit of information to clear that up. But there's definitely opportunities to make sure that you're getting coverage for things that are truly new. If you had a situation where the pet came in and they had diarrhea and treated and it resolved, and 2 weeks later it had diarrhea and treated and it resolved, and it's really starting to show a trend of continuity, or it's starting to look suspicious for something like an IBD, that's a situation where, you know, the medical records are really going to demonstrate that this is just an ongoing or persistent issue. And that's, again, something where, you know, we need to exchange the right amount of information to just make that distinction between the two issues.
That makes sense. I think I can wrap my head around that. Yeah, that helps a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome. We discuss diarrhea a lot here in insurance.
Sure. I know. Isn't that funny? I feel like that's just such a part of being a veterinarian that like we
it
just
really
discuss
is.
Diarrhea, no problem. People are like, oh, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the other things I have talked to owners about, had owners ask me about, especially when we talk about things like health savings account, is, Do I need insurance, or, can I put money aside and save that for my pet having a condition? So, when owners bring something like that up, I feel like I never have the perfect answer, but it sounds like there really aren't perfect answers, that every situation is individual. But how do you think about a pet health savings account as opposed to an insurance policy?
So again, I'm gonna rewind back to my time in practice where, I would have somebody come in pretty frequently with a new pet, a new adoptee, a puppy or kitten, and they'd say, "I want you to know I started a savings account for my pet's vet bills." And I, as their vet, I'd be so proud of them, right? I really
Yes.
thought it really demonstrated a lot of responsibility and such good foresight. So I would be pretty excited when I had those owners come in. But over time, there were some situations where I really witnessed those savings accounts disappoint my clients. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that when you're welcoming a new pet into your home, you're thinking about all the changes you need to make to fit that new pet into your life. And so you're thinking about that savings account. But the pet fits into your life and becomes a routine part of your family really quickly. And sometimes you forget about that savings account. And so, the whole initiative gets forgotten, and then there's not very much there, right? The other thing is that if people run into a tighter time financially, there's a huge kind of temptation to stop that saving. Or if you have a non-pet emergency, so your pet might be the most important thing in your life. So you have a savings account for your pet, but you don't have one for your roof or your car or maybe even your kids' braces, right? But when those unignorable emergencies come up and you have this little pool of money set aside, sometimes you have no choice but to dip into it. And so those types of things would happen with the savings account. But most often, and the biggest failing I found about the savings account was that they just didn't accumulate fast enough to meet people's needs. So $100 a month seems to be the magic number that people put into a health savings account. And as vets will know that, especially if a pet needs like a surgery or hospitalization, $5,000 vet bill is really, really common. But if you're saving $100 a month, that's going to take you 4 years to get there. So, and a cruciate ligament rupture tends to happen when they're about 3 or 4 years old, right? So, and that just that one issue is going to have you right back to square one. With your savings, you can blow through the $5,000 really quickly. So that was where I found people were most disappointed. It's nice to have it aside, but it doesn't have a lot of staying power, and it takes a long time to get to that magic number where you feel comfortable with your rainy day savings.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Of I could see it in the beginning, being very excited and very diligent about making sure you're setting that money aside, and then just over time, nothing's happening and it's not exciting, and there's
Life happens.
yeah, exactly. So there's more month than money, which I think, we could all relate to in various scenarios. And so it's sort of falling by the wayside. So yeah, that absolutely makes a lot of sense in terms of how we're considering what's best for this pet.
So in contrast, the insurance plans, they have that full limit, whatever kind of limit you chose, an annual limit or a per condition limit, and those are available to you as soon as your policy is active. So it's just, gets you off the ground just a little bit faster. And if you have an annual reimbursement policy, those limits renew every year. So if you do have a chronic illness or something comes up next year, you're set. You have something that's going to work for you.
Yes, those dogs that the two foreign bodies in a row kind or foreign body in a cruciate kind of situation.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, and when we're talking about a lot of this, when we're talking about chronic conditions or injuries, whether it's foreign body or a cruciate ligament or something like that, so much of what we need to consider, and I love that this conversation is happening so much in veterinary medicine, is spectrum of care. So what role does insurance play when it comes to spectrum of care?
Spectrum of care is one of those conversations that I've followed so closely. And I saw somebody bring up the term context-based care or contextualized care kind of as a synonym. And I really liked that because, as you'll know from clinic, there's a lot of things that come into choosing a treatment plan or adjusting a treatment plan. And that could be things like you know, how well does the pet tolerate things like injections or eardrops or eye drops or whatever, you know, you might need to do with the pet? What are the family's values and preferences? You know, if they've been through cancer with a human family member and a pet is diagnosed, you know, do they want to travel the same treatment road, or do they have, you know, these values around care? What are your physical abilities to take care of an animal? How close is your vet? How easy are they to get a hold of? And then there's also the cost of care. So I think from the insurance context, we're thinking about spectrum of care or context-based care in terms of adjusting treatment plans to fit a certain budget or the cost of care. But really, there are so many other factors that go into it. And the way I think of pet insurance in relation to this whole context of choosing a treatment plan is that I want to see the cost of care be the smallest consideration in choosing a treatment plan. I want people to adjust their treatment plan for every other reason other than cost. And that's where I think pet insurance really shines, because it takes away, or it really reduces the cost consideration and allows us to think about, you know, what's right for this pet? What's right for this family? What are they really going to be able to handle when it comes down to the actual care that we're implementing for this pet?
I think that was a perfect explanation. I can very much relate to that. Of, like you said, there's all kinds of reasons why we may have to veer away from our original plan, but it's so nice when cost isn't one of them and we're really just fully focused, able to focus on the patient and the family without having to feel like, you know, could we have done better here or there if we had more resources?
Absolutely. And I think cost for me was one of the biggest things that came in between my relationship with my clients and their pets, because that was just this big barrier that I had to present to them before they could even consider, you know, what they wanted to do in terms of treatment. And that was just very difficult for me practicing, and I'm sure it was very difficult for my clients. So just removing that seems like it's how I found my way to pet insurance, because I remember thinking, how much different would my life be if I never had to have this conversation with my clients? You know, I would just be figuring out, what do they really want? Not, you know, what can they afford today?
Right. And it gets kind of gray when you're explaining it to clients too, because at the end of the day, we're the medical professionals and we're the ones making recommendations and determining what our baseline standard of care is. And we're explaining it to pet owners, but you know, at the end of the day, a lot of it falls to us because we're the ones who are medically trained. So not only taking that barrier away as the relief it could provide to veterinarians and to pet owners, but also some of those discussions that can be really complicated and can be hard to explain and really determine what the best plan for that pet is going to be.
Absolutely. And pet owners are always going to be stressed when they're worrying about the well-being of an animal that they really love. But the money factor really does amp that up. And as we know, when the pet owner is stressed, the pet tends to be more stressed. They're more difficult to handle in the clinic, and the experience is just as not as good as it could be. So we just want to see that experience being just a little bit more easy to manage for the pet owner and the vet too.
Absolutely. Managing illnesses and injuries and things in pets is hard enough as it is. Let's make it as easy as possible.
Yes. Absolutely.
Dr. Sperry, thank you so much. This has been a really great discussion. I absolutely learned a lot that I wasn't clear on when it came to pet insurance. So thank you so much for joining me. Are there any final thoughts you want to share?
For me as a vet, I think that pet insurance has a big opportunity to change the way veterinarians experience their day in terms of the decision-making when it comes to choosing a treatment plan. I definitely believe in that. I saw the differences in clinics. And so I just want to have vets know that they can, you know, they can come to us for the information that they need to really understand how these policies are working so that they can feel comfortable interacting with us as an insurance company and also discussing the concept of insurance with their clients. And thank you so much for taking the time and giving this issue your attention.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, it has. Thank you.
Thank you so much to everyone for tuning into this episode. I hope you, like me, now maybe feel a little less overwhelmed when we get those inevitable questions in the exam room from pet owners who want to know more about pet insurance. I want to say a big thank you to ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program for making this episode possible. And thank you so much to Dr. Sperry for joining us. It was such a pleasure to talk to you. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast to help you and other veterinary professionals find other great content that we try to put out there. If you'd like to hear more episodes, you can click on the education tab on the Vetfolio website. And of course, we'd love to hear your input on this episode, as well as ideas for topics you'd like to hear from us in the future. So feel free to reach out to me at dvm@vetfolio.com. You can also visit my Facebook page at Dr. Cassie DVM, or we can connect on Instagram at dr.cassie.dvm. And remember, if one animal is better off because of you today, it's a great day.